want to welcome you once again to Mustard Seed's audio presentation. This time, it is on the fear of God. If you will look on the home page, you will see that there is something new. We are starting a devotional series, and we would like to have you write a devotional for us. We're going to open this up to everyone that listens to Mustard Seed throughout the world. And we encourage you to write something. Everybody has a story. You have a story to tell, maybe more than one. Click on the homepage on the area that says New Devotional and look at the guidelines and be sure and send us your devotional as soon as you can. We really would appreciate hearing from you in this area. Also, you'll see that we are starting our newsletter. We've had posted for a long time on our homepage, but now we are beginning to send out newsletters, and we would ask you to sign up for that. You might find it to be quite interesting. And let us know what part of the world you're from. Many times we give our presentation for the Midwest of the United States, and we don't know who all we're touching. We know that there are many of you throughout the world that come to our website because we have the statistics and the data. Tell us who you are and where you're from. In fact, you don't have to even tell us who you are. Just tell us where you're from. When we talk about the fear of God, let's start with the fear of man, or just fear in general. What is fear? Fear is based on the threat of danger. It doesn't have to be real danger, or what we call realized danger. It can be unrealized danger. It can be something that we think will happen in the future that's unrealized at this point, and it is actually part of our imagination, even though we have some facts to back it up. As we look at realized fear, fear that is happening right now, it would be like you're crossing a street and all of a sudden you look up and you've been daydreaming and there's a Mack truck bearing down on you. Inside of you, there are many things that happen in our body, and I'll tell you a few of them in a few minutes here. But the first thing you will do is you will either freeze or you will run, dive for the curve. Or maybe you're in the Midwest or in Tornado Alley somewhere, and you see or you perceive that there is a threat from a tornado, and you have your family there, and you can feel the fear coming into your heart. And in this case, if you see the tornado, it's a good fear. Realized fear keeps us from dying. It actually is a survival mechanism that nature or God has placed in us when it designed us. It's a good thing. Many times, it saves our life. What happens to the body when we either are in the midst of fear, like realized fear, or we imagine that there's going to be some kind of danger in the future? First of all, the brain kind of triggers things. It kind of kicks things off. Then the sympathetic nervous system becomes activated. Adrenaline glands begin to send out adrenaline and several other substances. Nerve cells release norepinephrine. Heart and pulse increase. Breathing shallows and is more rapid. Muscles tense, ready for anything. The digestive system shuts down, and our hands and our feet become icy cold. Now, this is the response of the body to a perceived threat, to the threat of danger. This danger doesn't have to be real. It doesn't have to be realized danger. It can be something that we think is going to happen to us in the future. That is always somewhat of a speculation. It is somewhat the use of our imagination. It may be true, and it may not be true. It may be partially true. But our body doesn't know the difference. If we sense danger, real or imagined, our body will begin to prepare for it. If we now take a look at unrealized danger, that is danger that has not happened to us, that's not before our eyes, danger that we perceive to be somewhere in the future, whether it is real, partially real, or all imaginary with no substance, is immaterial, is all lumped into this category of unrealized danger. Why do we have fears like this? Well, one of the big reasons is life is bigger than us. I don't think there's too many people to think that they're bigger than life. If there is, they've already got a problem. To some degree, We are at the mercy of life because it's simply bigger than us. We cannot truly figure it out, and much of the time we're at its mercy. Now, we don't like to admit this because it is a little scary to know that we are at the mercy of something we don't truly understand and that could have serious consequences to our life and our body. So most of us entertain some illusions of control. We would like to think, and we kind of imagine, that we have more control than what we do. One old philosopher said, it doesn't really matter what happens to us to a great degree, it's how we perceive what happens to us. Our perception is kind of like our thinking filter. As we look at life, this thinking filter kind of filters out part of it and lets part of it in. The cleaner the filter is, the more of reality of the way things really are that it lets in, the better the thinking filter. But two people can have the same thing happen to them, and one of them is thrown into an emotional and mental crisis, and another one just shrugs it off like water off the duck's back. It is not so much what happens to us, it's mostly our much of how we perceive it through our thinking filter. It is important for our mental health for us to understand more about this idea of perception or thinking filter. Let's say that we have a situation. We come to a party and there's a lot of people there, and as we walk around in the room or the rooms of the party, we see a group over in a corner who maybe are the popular people or maybe people that we respect or whatever. And there's a group of them together, and one of them is whispering to the rest of them, and they're all kind of huddled around, and all of a sudden they glance in our direction and begin to laugh. Now that's quite a situation, because now we're in a position where our thinking filter enters in. Many of us would think, because the one person looked at us first, that there was something they were talking about us, and it was not good because they laughed when they saw us. Now we would feel what? We would feel probably maybe anger, we'd feel discouraged, we'd feel put down, and we could go into a lot of different kinds of feelings, but we'd feel maybe even anxiety, maybe even a little fear, you know. But how would we choose to act? Well, we might ignore them for the rest of the night, and if we see them on the street, we might cross over to the other side of the street. We might choose to just kind of cut them out of our life because of what they've done. What if we found out that it had nothing to do with us at all? That it was something totally different that they were talking about, and they just happened to be glancing in our direction, or they were looking at the person behind us, or they were looking at the clock on the wall to see what time their ride was going to come, or whatever. Our mental filter has so much to do with how we feel and how we act. Let's take the example of a man that was had a really tough day at work. And he was in New York City, and he got on the subway, and I believe this is true. And luckily, the car was empty, and he could just sit back and relax, and he pulled the newspaper out, and was reading the newspaper, and he was finally starting to wind down a little bit when a man walked in with a little girl and a little boy. And the man sat down in a corner and just kind of sulked in the corner, and the kids just tore around that car, that subway car, tearing up things, tripping over him, knocked the newspaper out of his hands. He'd finally had enough. You can imagine what this man would feel like, the frustration and the anger of this father not taking care of his children. And his thought was, why would a parent allow his kids to do this? And he finally spoke up. He became so angry that he spoke up and said, don't you have any control over your children? And the man said, normally we do. Normally they're good kids. But we just found out a few minutes ago that my wife and their mother had been raped and murdered. I have retreated inside my shell because I don't know what to do. And they've done the only thing that they know to do. They're just acting out. They don't know how to deal with this calamity, with this tragedy. As you look at that, you'll find, I believe, that your feelings have changed. Your perception, your thinking filter has seen reality, has seen the truth. And because of it, now we will begin to act more appropriately. That's the thing about it, see? As we think, it is so important that we think carefully, that we check our thinking filter to make sure that it's clean and it's allowing the reality of life, the real world, the real event in front of us to come in correctly. To people would call it seeing reality as it is. It's very important that we learn to look at our thoughts. They are separate from us, and that we are able to analyze them, that we kind of quarantine them in a sense until we're sure that they are true enough to begin to believe, because they will have a profound effect on how we feel and then how we choose to act. We have saw that life is bigger than us, and it is a potential danger to us since we cannot control it. But my friends, there's a bigger object than life that we can't control, and that is the supernatural. I think we all kind of know that there is something out there, but we understand it even less than we understand life, and we have less control over it than we do over life, which we have very little control of to start with. It is therefore bigger than life and presents us with a potential dangerous situation. The bigger the danger, the more it influences us. I think it's important because that's why the supernatural can influence us more than the natural world that we see. It's like a man that worked in a mine, and there was a bully there, and he bullied the people all the time. And he bullied this man, and though it did not completely dominate his life, it made his life more miserable, more difficult. One day they were down in a mine, deep in the mine, in a new shaft, and they used to carry birds with them years ago, and if there was some noxious gases, it would kill the bird, and it would kill the bird long before it would affect the humans, and therefore they would know it was time to run. And when they were down in this mine, the bird all of a sudden just dropped dead in his cage. They turned to run, and the bully said, "Oh no, you're not running, you're not going back this way." Now, I will guarantee you that bully had feet marks on his back as they walked over him. They had found a bigger fear than the bully, and it had more of an influence on them. Now, if we look at God, and we look at him as a wrathful, uncaring, impersonal being of some type, we have a problem, because now we have something that is not only bigger than life, but it isn't on our side. Years ago, back in ancient history, the natives at times would see the sun go across the sky, and then when it went down the horizon, they thought a dragon was going to swallow it up. And since there was no God that was really on their side, they would sit out there at twilight and throw their spears at the horizon. We might laugh at that, but they were really afraid. In the Pacific Islands, we know that they have volcanoes and they have typhoons and hurricanes and so on. And since they did not understand the supernatural, the natives would do almost anything to appease this wrathful god, or gods as they called them. They would go so far, they would have such a fear of these gods that they would go so far as to sacrifice their children. Now, folks, that takes a great deal of fear for a parent to sacrifice their child. My friends, if God doesn't care and is wrathful, we have a real problem. We have to somehow make life work, which is bigger than us, which we cannot control. And at the same time, we have to appease God, or we might get zapped. It's kind of like a leaky cup, okay? If we look in the Bible, back in the time of the kings of Israel, there was a king, a great king called King David. And King David wrote many psalms and many different types of poetry and so on, explaining what was going on inside of him and his relationship with God and with men and so on and so forth. one thing he explained many times was the concept of a cup inside of him. And when his cup was full and running over, he felt joy and hope and goodwill. There was a great sense of well-being and love and confidence. Now we can look at the other side of the coin. If the cup was empty, what would we feel like? Depressed, discouraged, hopeless and helpless, the fears on every corner, anxiety. Now, not everybody that experiences depression and anxiety and so on has an empty cup, but that would be the results of having an empty cup. Now, there's not too many things that most of us wouldn't do to stay away from that empty cup, to be a zero, to be nothing, to be unloved, that others don't care for us, that we have all these negative feelings and interpretations of life. Our filter, our thinking filter, would become very plugged and dirty, and we see life very distorted. We'd have a hard time seeing our own value. One of the things in this life, we know it is not a great environment. We were never really designed for this environment. We were designed to live in a loving environment dependent on a loving God. So our cup, in a sense, has a crack in it, and it leaks. So what do we do? Well, if we have a wrathful God, and He's not going to help us, we can't look at the supernatural. In fact, the supernatural becomes somewhat of our enemy, because now we have to appease whatever's out there. So what do? As the liquid runs out of our cup, we sense that we are not worthwhile. We begin to get these negative feelings. So we work hard to keep that from happening. We might be a real workaholic, and we want financial success, because financial success would seem to offer us some security. It's doubtful that it does, according to most surveys. But it would seem to offer us a way to keep that cup full. Or maybe we want a career. We want fame. We want to be looked up to. We want to be the best-selling author. We want to be a star some way. Maybe it's through education. You know, you got a PhD after your name. That does buy a little respect in life. Maybe it's education. I'm not saying everybody who gets educated is trying to overcome this, but there are some surveys out that show that this does hold true many times for PhDs, or many PhDs. We might want friendships. We might want to try to get others to think well of us, and we work very hard at that. And whenever they don't, we're really in trouble. We might be seeking attention, looking for respect. Maybe we've got some kind of philosophy. You know, sometimes the power of positive thinking. Positive thinking is wonderful, but the power of positive thinking, using it to fill our cup and find value in life, is a real treadmill. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe we have a sexual addiction, or drugs, or alcohol. There are so many different ways that we try to fill this cup. And see what happens. What does life become like when we are trying all the time to fill up this leaky cup? It becomes a treadmill, and we can't get off of it. We don't dare get off of it, because if we have determined through our thinking filter, if we have determined that the only way that we can keep this cup full, the only way we can find value and love and acceptance in life is by our own efforts, then we are in a very difficult position, my friend. We're on a treadmill, and we can't seem to be able to get off. It might be a little bit like a girl that was born into a family. We believe now, or at least psychologists believe, that 50% of our traits, our personality, comes from genetic circumstances beyond our control, and 50% come from conditioning or situationals, or our environment that we live in life. But this girl was born into a family that had a very popular older sister and a rather critical mother. And she was born with some traits that were shy, and she couldn't compete with her older sister. And her older sister got all the attention, and her mother reminded her constantly what a popular girl her older sister was, and what great things she was doing for the family and for herself, and on. And pretty soon, this girl developed a very distorted thinking filter. She saw life as being pretty hostile, and that she couldn't compete normally with other people, especially if they were a little outgoing or something. So what does she do? She found out that if she stayed in the background, and if she worked really hard, and if she worked hard and she succeeded and she actually excelled, she felt that she would be okay. It was like she was filling her cup with this. But if she failed, all of a sudden her world came caving in, and she began to see herself as worthless and of no value. And then she became depressed and discouraged and anxious. My friend, if you are on the treadmill trying to fill this cup, there is a better way. Let's take a few minutes now and kind of ask the question, what if, concerning God? What if this, what if that? Kind of like speculating a little bit. What if God was powerful and intelligent beyond our wildest imaginations, beyond our comprehension to understand? He would definitely have the ability to be wrathful. I mean, who could stand against him? No one could stand against him. But what if he was also, he remained in the background? You know that human beings are in rebellion against God and his kingdom. The Bible makes that very explicit. At one point, we were close to him, and then we rebelled, and now we have a problem walking with God. We're really condemned people, in a sense. What if he waited for us to reach out for him? He's given us an awful lot of proof, hasn't he, as we look out in the cosmos. But what if he was waiting for us to come to him? First of all, if he was, it would not mean that he wasn't there. Let's take the little boy who was born in the Ukraine, and he walked past this facility that had a big warning out. This is a nuclear plant, and you know, be careful, because you know, you could really get in trouble here. There's extreme danger and so on. He walked past this thing in the kindergarten, and then in first grade and second grade, and you know, nothing ever happened to him. And one day, as he was walking by, he got the idea that, hey, I'm not so sure this is really true. Come on, I've done this for years. And he decided, and he stuck his tongue out, you know, at the plant. And then he ran the first time. And the second time he stuck his tongue out and nothing happened. And, you know, after a while he walked by there and he would just stick his tongue out for a long time. No problem whatsoever, except for one day. As he lived, as he walked past that plant in Chernobyl, it blew its top. People died. He saw it happen in his village. He saw people dying, and he saw the after effects of the disease. And they couldn't see it. They couldn't really truly understand what was happening. But all of a sudden, he knew that behind that fence was something very, very powerful. And though it did not always show up, he learned to have a profound effect for nuclear energy. One thing about God, if he was that powerful and intelligent, he would be bigger than life, that's for sure. He would be able to zap us, as we said before. He would be an awesome creature, an awesome being. And if we took him serious, if we really saw it like that boy finally saw on nuclear energy, he would get our attention, because someday we have to face him. And we have ample proof, actually, that he is this powerful and intelligent. Just look at the cosmos. Look at the Big Bang Theory. Study it a little bit and you'll find that it's the fingerprint of God. Look at our bodies, the complexity of all of this. Who in the world could imagine that this is somehow an accident? Let's go a step further and make another assumption. What if this God was not only incredibly powerful and intelligent, but remarkably loving, caring, and personal? Well, first of all, he could easily have zapped us, and since he didn't zap us, since he's dealt with it, he's allowed us to live and many times prosper, it would seem to prove in some sense that he did care about us. In fact, if we go back into history, it is extremely well documented that Jesus Christ came to earth, that Jesus Christ was the Son of God according to the Bible, and that he died on an old Roman cross. Why? Well, history won't say this necessarily, But the Bible says it. He died because he was the Son of God, and he had come to be a ransom for us, the rebels, those who were disobedient to God and didn't go along with his kingdom and rule, who one day would be destroyed if we didn't put it together. If God were caring and loving, how could he help us with our problem with the leaky cup? You know, we would be trying hard in life to fill that cup, and many times we would fall short and it would be difficult for us to deal with. We would have some pretty conflicting feelings. How could he help us in this area? Well, he could make up for the shortfall. You know, we could give it our best effort, but knowing we could not completely do it because life is bigger than us, he could fill in for us, and he could at times give us a sense of well-being and joy that we really did not earn. That was really a gift from him. Some people would call it grace. So he would be able to help us in this area, and he wouldn't be the type, from what we see in the Bible, he wouldn't be the type that would just give us everything. We all know how easy we are spoiled. We're inferior beings. We don't have the discipline, in most cases, to be able to deal with a lot of good things. We soon give up, and we soon just sit back and take it easy, and you know, we don't produce, we don't live up to our potential. He wouldn't do that to us. He wouldn't stunt our growth and our ability to develop virtue. He wouldn't do that. It's kind of like the our grandkids just recently had a caterpillar or like a worm, and they put it in a jar, and eventually it made a cocoon quickly. It was interesting. And one day there was a butterfly in their jar. They say that when a butterfly comes out of the cocoon, they have to struggle and work their wings and their muscles to be able to get out. If they don't, they're stunted and they're not able to live up to their potential, maybe not even be able to fly. We wouldn't want that, nor would God want that. He would care for us in many ways if we would look to him for our value and security. Of course, we have to take him serious. That's why we look at the fear of God, or the awesomeness of God, how big he really is. We have to take him serious, and then we have to trust him if we want him to work with us, if we want him to help us with our leaky cup. It's kind of like this man that was in an orchestra, and he was really a younger fellow, and he was really had a lot of potential. And when he first went into the orchestra, the conductor was a extremely good conductor, well thought of and respected throughout the world, a little bit of a sober man. And at first, when he would play and the audience would clap, he would really get excited, and that was really what turned him on. Then eventually, sometimes he would play really well, but the audience wouldn't pick up on it right, and they wouldn't clap and so on. He'd feel terrible, you know, and knowing that he'd done his best. And he learned something. Rather than look at the audience, he would look at the conductor. Sometimes the audience would go wild with their applause and give him a standing ovation, and the conductor would not smile. You could see that he was not really impressed that the music wasn't that good, that the audience for some reason had picked up on something. And then he would watch them, and he got to the point where when the audience was quiet and wouldn't give him an applause, if that conductor would turn his way and smile, that's what made his day. That's kind of what he lived for. So we can see here how the love of God and the fear of God can coexist. The fear of God is simply that he is so awesome, so big, and rules and owns everything. And no one can stand against him. Whatever he decides to do, no one can stand against him. On the other hand, he is remarkably loving. He loves and values us more than we can ever imagine. And if we trust him, that love and guidance that he will provide for us will show up in all areas of our life. My friend, the description we just had, the what if about God, is true. He is the God of the Bible. And my friend, he would like you. He has worked life in many ways to get you to trust him and to walk with him. It's a very difficult thing for us to do sometimes, to give up our will. But believe me, He has the power, the intelligence, and the love to make it work for you. And one day, if you trust Him, He will take you to paradise with Him. Let me conclude here with just reading one of the many promises that God has for those who will learn to fear Him, take Him serious, and learn to love Him, trust Him with all of their life, a wholehearted trust in Him. It's in the last part of Romans. If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare His own Son, but gave Him up for all of us, how will He not also, along with Him, graciously give us all things? Who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? It is God who justifies. Who is he that condemns? Jesus Christ, who died, more than that, who was raised to life, is at the right hand of God, and is also interceding for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble, or hardship, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or danger, or sword? As it is written, for your sake we face death all day long. We are considered as sheep to be slaughtered. No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels nor demons, nor the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord.